Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Events with Benefits, a podcast designed to help nonprofit organizations raise more money and achieve greater success at your fundraising events. My name is Danny Hooper. I'm a professional fundraising auctioneer and coming to you today once again from Southern California, the world headquarters of Windspire in Laguna Beach. And I'm joined here by the VP, the Vice President of Marketing for Windspire, Ian Loth.
Hey, Danny, can I just say that the shirt you're wearing today is outstanding. It's great, great pattern.
We don't have Nordstrom's up in Canada where I live. I live in Victoria. We don't have Nordstrom. So when I come down here to Southern California, the first stop is always Nordstrom Rack.
It's a shopping spree.
Isn't that a nice shirt?
Yeah, I like it.
$49.95. It would cost $250 in Canada. All right. Renee Zhao is with us here today, our other co-host from Donation Match. And Renee, I just always like to credit you. You are the one that came up with the idea for doing this podcast, which we're so excited is really gaining traction out there and helping a lot of nonprofit organizations. That's our mission here. And good on you for coming up with the idea. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. And definitely, I know you and I and Ian have talked a lot about things that we see in our industries and in dealings with nonprofits. And there's just so much we see that they can't possibly know because they're not talking to hundreds, thousands of them a year, and just had to get this information out.
Yeah, you know, it's great to have all these guests on here. So many thought leaders, industry leaders, people who are really out there on the front lines at these events, learning how to raise money in new and innovative ways. And today's guest, Teresa Stivers, she's the CEO at Walden Family Services. She has a remarkable story, doesn't she, Danny?
Well, she really does. This is an organization that largely has depended on government funding for their entire history, which is over 40 years now, I believe. And over time, the government has cut back on the amount of their funding, forcing an organization like Walden Family Services to go out there and get creative. And we're going to talk to Teresa Stivers, the CEO, and find out how they've gone from zero to 120. They don't fool around with small events. They do one huge gala every year, big name entertainment, high ticket price. And so I was curious, you know, they don't do fundraising on an ongoing basis through the year. They only do this one event and don't have a deep-rooted background in doing events. How the heck do they pull it together?
Well, and what I found interesting about Teresa and Walden Family Services is that because they have such a small staff and not really, you know, they're not really focused on the fundraising event because they can't afford to year round, she really does hone in on what does bring in the most revenue for them at events, and actually has a couple really innovative ideas which really can apply to anybody else's event. You know, not just the high-end ones that that she runs, but, you know, just some tips that will actually, you know, could actually double the revenue at your event with, you know, just focusing.
She also talks a little bit about, you know, how she no longer does the silent auction, which I know would be a dream for many of you out there, considering it often takes the most amount of time to prepare for and doesn't necessarily always have the highest return. So definitely stay tuned for that.
But she's considering an option to the silent auction, and we'll hear about that towards the end of the interview. Let's get started right now. So Teresa Stivers, CEO at Walden Family Services, I suppose a good place to start here is by asking, what is Walden Family Services?
We are a foster and adoption organization based in San Diego, but we have offices throughout Southern California. And in addition to providing foster and adoption services, we also have child abuse prevention services and reunification services for children who are in foster care.
Very good. Can you give us maybe a little history on the organization? And first of all, where did the name come from?
It actually comes from Thoreau's ideal utopia for the environment in which children and families thrive. A lot of people don't know that, so I'm glad that you asked, because people think, oh, who is Walden and how are they supporting you? And I really wish there was a supportive family named Walden, but there isn't.
And some of the history on the organization?
We were formed 41 years ago. to help children who've been abused and neglected. And originally at that time, we had group homes to take care of children. It's kind of like a smaller version of orphanages. But as time progressed and research has shown that children do better when they're in a family situation, we completely converted to foster care and adoption. We were foster care for about 20 years, and then in 2008 we got our adoption license because we learned that having children placed in a forever home, a permanent home, at the earliest possible age provided the best outcomes and results for these children as they grow into successful adults.
Well, what would the average age be of the kids that are getting adopted?
You know, we specialize in getting children who are a little harder to be adopted. So that means that children who have special health care needs, developmental disabilities, large sibling groups, older children with behavioral and mental health issues. So our average age is actually much older. If people come to Walden and say that they're looking to adopt a healthy young baby, we tell them that we're probably not the right fit for them, mm-hmm. and we'll refer them to other organizations.
And what kind of an impact do you feel you're having there? How many lives would you be impacting over the course of a typical year?
Over the course of a typical year, we impact about 1,500 children's and families' lives, either through foster care, adoption, prevention services, working with teen parents so that they can learn skills that they need so that their children don't end up in foster care. As I said, we have a wide variety of services throughout Southern California, and we try to meet the needs of all children and families so that they can stay safe and secure and together in the same home.
Wow. Sounds like a big operation, Teresa, and that leads us to the question of funding. And, of course, here on Events with Benefits, our podcast specializes in fundraising. So how do you go about, if I may ask, how do you go about funding your operations?
Well, we're about 93% government funded. And actually, in the 41-year history of our organization, for the first 25 years, we didn't have to fundraise. We were very fortunate in that the government funding for what we do actually covered all the costs. But about 15 years ago, when we saw that government contracts were shrinking, yet the cost of caring for these children and families continued to grow and grow, we decided that we needed to start learning how to fundraise. And so even though we're 41 years here in Southern California, we're fairly new on the fundraising arena. And one of the first events that we put together that's going to be in its 15th year this year is Wine Divine, which is a pretty was a unique event at the time where we bring together different renowned chefs such as Jeffrey Strauss from Pamplemousse in Del Mar and different wineries throughout California, mostly in Napa and Sonoma area, as well as some key entertainment. Last year we had Tom Fogerty, and it was held at the Estancia Hotel in La Jolla, and we raised more than $500,000. So it was a truly wonderful event in terms of fundraising for us, but also to help us get our name out there. We like to say that we're the best kept secret in Southern California. All the people in the industry know who we are. A lot of foster parents, adoptive parents, the counties, the regional centers, et cetera, know who we are. But your mainstream general person who might be philanthropic and looking to support an organization doesn't necessarily know who Walden is. So having someone like a Tom Fogerty and having a high-profile event in San Diego is really helping us market and brand ourselves so that people are aware of us.
Well, you make a very, very important point, and that is certainly one of the key benefits of having an annual event like a gala, is that it really does put kind of a face to the name and helps to educate the public, just as you've already explained so clearly to us. Let's just talk about, since you don't specialize in putting together events, it sounds like you do the one major event a year. How do you go about getting that organized? I mean, we have a lot of nonprofits that we talk to here on Events with Benefits. They're used to doing events. They'll have multiple events through the year. They'll have fundraising golf tournaments. They'll have a gala. They'll have walkathons, running events and things like that. But when you're just doing one event a year and when you don't have a deep-rooted background in hosting events, what are some of the challenges that you faced and how have you overcome them?
Well, number one, the challenge is the shortage of the staff. We don't really have a special events or fundraising staff. We're a very small office in that area. We have, so we're very fortunate in that we have some wonderful supporters, board members, volunteers, advisory board members who help us both financially by underwriting, for instance, our entertainment. Jeffrey Strauss, as I mentioned, at Pamplemousse, who helps us get restaurants and wineries involved, and wonderful chairs who have a lot of connections out in the community and can pull together their connections to help us put these events together, from everything from making the centerpieces to doing the decor, organizing the music. All of those kinds of things are done mainly by volunteers, and we're very, very fortunate to be able to have that, as I mentioned, because we're very light in staff in that area. We have a lot of social workers. We have a lot of caseworkers, a lot of people who can support and take wonderful care of children, but not a lot of staff members who have expertise in the fundraising and marketing area.
Well, you certainly seem to have a core understanding of one very important point, and that is something that the National Auctioneers Association studied many years ago, and that they asked a huge survey group, what's the number one reason that you choose to attend a fundraising event? And overwhelming the response, 93% of the respondents said the number one reason they attend is for the fun factor. And it's not necessarily to support the cause, but they're coming for the fun. And it certainly appears that you understand that in putting together your event, Wine Divine. So let's just talk about some of the highlights over the past few years. It sounds like you've had some great entertainers. You pull some great chefs together. How do you generate revenue from that event? And let's maybe start with the ticket sales. We'll have you talk to us a little bit about maybe sponsorship, underwriting, things like that.
Absolutely. Well, first and foremost, sponsorship and underwriting, because these kinds of events are very, very expensive, and we don't have obviously the cash flow to put out for these major entertainers, the venue, et cetera. So we're very fortunate to have some very generous sponsors and underwriters, first and foremost, and that actually, the level of the support that we received decides actually whether what type of entertainment we're going to be able to afford. And as I mentioned, we were very privileged to have Tom Fogerty last year for our 40th anniversary event. And again, that was all underwritten. And then on top of that, we have our ticket sales, and we have different organizations who help us market that. We have a lot of supporters, different organizations who come in and volunteer. They help us promote our organization, volunteers with publicity, et cetera. So ticket sales is really important. And then we have some generous supporters who help us with auction items. Jeffrey Strauss always does a wonderful dinner that he auctions off. Balboa Travel comes in with a great vacation, et cetera. All of those are completely donated. So when we auction those items off, all of the funding comes directly to Walden, and we are able to put it directly to our children and families. And we're very lucky that we're able to put 87 cents of every dollar that we spend here at Walden Family Services directly to the children and families, and only 13% in overhead and fundraising.
That is remarkable. You compare that to industry standards, and I know some organizations spend, I don't know, you hear 50, 60% of their revenue, sometimes more, on just administration. So it sounds like you folks are doing just a great job. Let's get back to ticketing for a second. It's very important that when you're hosting an event that you look at every opportunity to create revenue. The focus from start to finish needs to be solidly on fundraising. The focus needs to be on the fundraising. So let's talk about ticketing. How do you go about setting your ticket price?
Well, first and foremost, we look at the cost of the event and how much is it actually costing us, even though it's all been underwritten through sponsors, how much would it cost to attend an event like this? And then we have to figure in that it's a fundraiser and that people know when they come to an event, it's a lot of fun, there's great food, there's great wine entertainment, but the point is to raise money for our children and families. So we base it on that area, and we raise it incrementally as needed in order to cover the cost of the wonderful events. When we started out 15 years ago, Clearly, we couldn't ask for $600 when we were having an event with, you know, Costco wine and cheese at the El Cortez downtown. But now that we're at these great venues like Hyatt Regency or the Estancia or the Grand Del Mar, and we have the entertainment, clearly, and that's a sit-down dinner, et cetera, clearly our costs go up, and we can raise the prices to accommodate that.
And what size of a crowd would you attract at those ticket prices?
We usually get, well, last year we sold out in our VIP section, actually. We were very surprised, very far in advance. People were calling us up until the day before the event because of the entertainment and wanted to be in the VIP section. And that's why we went to a larger venue this year at the Hyatt Regency in La Jolla. And also people we found out wanted to dance, and we didn't have a dance floor, so they were kind of dancing around the tables. This year we have a dance floor. We have a larger area for the VIP section, and then we have some very good general seats. It's a larger venue, but it's still intimate enough that you get to be up close and personal with the entertainment.
That's very cool. Well, you've underscored another really important point for people to understand here is that never to underestimate the capacity of your audience to give. If you're giving them a reason to come to the event and you're providing lots of fun, it's never a problem or rarely a problem to ask for a premium ticket price. And lots of times I think organizations tend to shortchange themselves. You know, you'll get a few people on a committee that say, oh, nobody will ever pay that kind of a ticket price. I always disagree with that. And I think, you know, you go for the highest ticket price possible, but that does place onus on you, the event organizer, to provide value for that ticket price. But if the value is there, they will pay. Do you agree?
Absolutely, 100%.
Now, I just wanted to talk to you about sponsorship next, because that obviously is another income stream. And
yes,
how do you go about
absolutely.
Getting your how do you go about identifying potential sponsors, and how do you approach them?
Well, we're very fortunate in that we work with a lot of corporations that support us throughout the year, not just at Wine Divine. And we have long-term relationships with these organizations. And we talk to them early on, even before we have a date and a venue and the entertainment. We talk to them about what we're thinking about, what kind of dollar amount that we're looking at, what we need to cover our costs early on, verbally, obviously. And then we follow up with some excellent written materials that show them very clearly what they're going to get for their investment in Walden Family Services. So in addition to attending a really fun event, we show them the types of programs and services that we can provide because of their support via sponsorship and underwriting. So we feel it's really important to provide as much information as possible and to maintain those relationships far beyond just asking them for their sponsorship and only hearing from us once a year.
Boy, that is such a key point. That's a great, great point you make there, Teresa. Say that one more time for our listeners, because that is so important for people to know. You've got to build relationships with these sponsors. You can't be coming to sponsors a month out or 2 months out before your event with your hands open if you haven't been nurturing a relationship. So let's just talk about that. Drill down a little bit more on that.
Oh, absolutely. I think that the key to cultivating relationships is that it is a relationship. It's a give and a take, and you just can't keep going over and over to the same people with your hand out and asking. It has to be, here's what we're going to do in return. In addition to providing you and your staff and your clients with a wonderful evening, we're going to keep you informed on a regular basis about the programs and services that we're providing and the investment that you're making in Walden, what your return on your investment is. Here's how we're changing lives in the community in which you live, and here are the outcomes that are being achieved because of our relationship. So basically, it's an ongoing communications with our sponsors throughout the year and not just coming to them right before the event and say, hey, are you writing that check again?
Yeah. And Teresa, how do you go about staying in touch with your sponsors?
Well, I'd like to personally contact them whenever possible, either via phone, via email. Afterwards, we like to deliver handwritten notes of little mementos from the event, photos of the event with them and either the entertainment or just them and their loved ones at the event, handwritten notes either dropped off or mailed to them, just to remind them about the great evening that they had and the relationship that we have, and also little stories about how that made a difference in a child's life.
Great. And how many times through the year on average would you want to reach out?
Oh, regularly. Studies have shown that you need to reach out to people a minimum of 11 times a year. So whether it be via email, phone, handwritten notes, materials that you're sending to them with information about the programs and the services that you provide, et cetera.
So year-round then, just about every month?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a communications calendar that we follow, and we try to hit up our top supporters at different levels on a regular basis, and we're continually checking that calendar and reminding each other, oh, have we called so-and-so? Have we sent dropped so-and-so a note? Reminding each other when it's time to communicate with somebody.
Great. You have a live auction component to your event, Wine Divine. Do you hire a professional fundraising auctioneer?
Oh, always. We find that the better the auctioneer, the higher the prices that we get. It absolutely makes a huge difference, and it's definitely not a skill set that I or any of our volunteers have. So we look to go to the professionals, and we ask their advice about, minimum bids, what increments we should raise, what do you think about this auction item, have you seen how this is done in the past, what are the trends, what are the areas that people are wanting to travel to, et cetera.
Well, that's a good point you make, and that's the nice thing about dealing with professional fundraising auctioneers as opposed to auctioneers that come from other sectors of the auction industry is that I think you'll find that most of the professional fundraising auctioneers who specialize in this space are more than happy to consult and coach you. Obviously, it's in everybody's best interest and a real win-win if the client is well-educated and the event is well set up and everybody's prepared in advance. So how about underwriting the auctioneer's fees? Is that something, do you get that underwritten or is that a hard cost?
That's a hard cost to us. We consider it an investment in the best interest of the organization. So that's something that we understand is a necessity that's built into the budget from day one.
All right. A lot of organizations do find underwriters for their auctioneers. And let's talk for a second about underwriting, something that you touched on earlier in the interview here, finding particular individuals or corporations to pay for the cost of a specific item or component of your event. And what are some of the things that you cover off at your event at Wine Divine through underwriting?
The VIP reception, for instance, is usually underwritten by somebody, and it's somebody who wants exposure to our very high-wealth individuals that are at that particular event. It's an exclusive event that we have for a very small segment of the population. So usually somebody, one of the companies, will underwrite the VIP event. Somebody will usually underwrite the entertainment. People will underwrite the programs, and then we'll have their information then written on the program. Whenever we can, obviously, we like to get everything underwritten so that all of the money we raise at the event will go directly to our children and families.
And are you able to offer your underwriters a charitable tax receipt?
Oh, absolutely. Based on fair market value, absolutely.
Good. Okay, so there's tax advantages. I guess why I asked that question, we're just trying to illustrate here to our listeners that there are good, solid reasons why it's okay to go out and approach people to underwrite these items. There's lots of value in it for the underwriters. So obviously, the people that underwrite these components of your event are happy to do so, primarily in exchange for the exposure to the audience that you're bringing to that event.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Great. Let's just talk for a second. You do some high-end entertainment without naming names. What are some of the, you're obviously out there talking to people in the entertainment industry, and for these real exclusive high-end events, what kind of an investment do organizations, what do they need to expect to be making in some of this name entertainment? Can you give us a range of prices?
Yes. It literally goes anywhere from $100,000 to $1 million, depending on what the organization is looking for. We work with a wonderful group called Bellotta Entertainment, and they sit down with our underwriters, and they give them an example of what the various entertainers will cost, and then our underwriters make a decision based on how much they want to provide, and based on there, we look forward to see what entertainers are available within that price range. And again, like as I said, we would not be able to do this without the generosity of our underwriters, and Bellotta Entertainment is one of our underwriters. They have a wonderful staff staff person there named Camille Carlin, who has worked with us exclusively, and she's done a wonderful job to make sure that the entertainer meets all of our needs as far as fundraising and is aware that this is a fundraising event. And to make sure that all of the costs are covered so that we're not left with any surprises at the end.
Wow. That's just really interesting the way that you're approaching this. So when you sit and you're looking at an entertainment budget that you're telling me starts at about $100,000 for your event, how do you start to visualize who an underwriter might be that you can approach for that kind of an investment?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, it's basically based on relationships. You have to have relationships with people, and we're very fortunate in that we have some key donors who have been very supportive of the cause of foster care and adoption and making sure that children find their forever families and can grow up to be successful adults. And they have been longtime supporters, love the event, have been to many different events throughout San Diego, but love this particular event, love this cause. And we just talk to them far enough in advance so that they're aware of what we're trying to do. We are aware of how much they want to invest, and it's a win-win for everyone involved.
One thing I've really noticed here talking to you, Teresa, it sounds like you've mastered the art of telling a compelling story.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm very passionate about what I do. And in fact, I think most people have a hard time getting me to stop talking about Walden Family Services.
Well, let's talk for a second about the value of good storytelling. And it's something really that all organizations need to really spend time. They need to drill down, find out what your compelling story is. You need to get good at telling that compelling story or an abbreviated version of it. And that's what opens people's hearts. Do you agree? And if so, maybe you can share some thoughts of yours on that.
You know, I absolutely do agree, because when you just tell someone, when someone asks you briefly, well, what is it that you do? And I say, I'm the CEO of a foster care and adoption agency. Oh, okay. And they don't really have a clear understanding of what that means. But if they have 5, 10, 15 minutes, whatever amount of time that they have, I will take that opportunity to tell them how we literally change the lives of children and families, how we are the difference between a child growing up and going to jail, becoming homeless, dying, et cetera, and how we can make a difference in that child's life and the impact that that has on the community in which we all live. And when you can show them, have them visualize that and show them, and then show them the success stories that we have. We have former foster youth at Columbia and law school doing wonderful things in this world who really could have gone a different path had it not been for Walden Family Services. And when you're able to see that and show them that the return on their investment, I find that people are very generous and willing to open up their checkbooks because they know that it not only impacts the children and the families that we serve, but in fact, it impacts the community in which we live.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, very powerful stuff. Let's go back to the event right now, and I just want to explore some of the other income streams that you have developed up over the 15 years that the event has been running. And do you have raffles? Do you have a funding item? What are some of the other components at the event where you can create income and revenue?
Well, we don't have raffles. We just found that was something that was too burdensome to fill out all of the paperwork with the IRS and et cetera, and trying to get people's information, you know, if they win so that we can report that to the IRS, et cetera. So what we have done instead is just a live auction of like 2 or 3 items. We don't want that live auction to go on very long. 2 or 3 really spectacular, wonderful items that you can't necessarily get out in the public. And then what we do is we call the raise the paddle, which is we ask someone to make an investment. We have a former foster youth speak and talk about how Walden has changed their life and how that they're a successful adult, maybe a successful parent raising children on their own. And then we ask people to raise the paddle so that more youth can get the opportunity to be successful. And we usually have a matching opportunity. We're very fortunate, again, to have some wonderful supporters this year. We have the Brady family that has agreed to provide a matching opportunity, and other people have done that in the past. So people like to raise the paddle when they hear a story of success and well-being, and especially when they know that their dollar is going to be matched dollar for dollar. So it's been very successful.
That's incredible. And can you share with us some results, maybe? Are you willing to do that
in the paddle raise? Oh, absolutely. Well, last year we were very fortunate in that we had a $75,000 match that we offered up that evening, and we not only exceeded that $75,000, we raised more than $120,000 at our Raise the Paddle. So on top of the $75,000, so it was over $200,000 just at the Raise the Paddle portion of it. So we find that it's very successful, again, to be able to share a story about why their dollars are so necessary, how they're being invested, to know for our donors that their dollars are being matched, and then to let them know what percentage of their dollars will go directly to our children and families.
Very good. And what increments? Well, first of all, who's doing the ask? Is it the auctioneer or your master
ceremony? The auctioneer, absolutely. Auctioneer. That's what we have, the professional auctioneer. We usually have a master ceremony and an auctioneer. Our master ceremony is Andrea Naverson, a former television personality, but we always have a professional auctioneer who does the ask immediately after our foster youth talks about their life in foster care system and how their life has been changed by Walden Family Services.
All right. Now, when they're conducting that paddle raise, is the auctioneer asking for higher increments or higher pledges and then coming down, or how do you
exactly.
do that?
Exactly. Yes. Yes. They usually start at maybe a $10,000, $15,000, or $20,000, and then go down. I think we go down all the way to 100.
Wow. Very, very good. Well, this is just incredible, and Renee is with us here from Donation Match. I know that you you girls are friends, and or ladies are friends. What's the right thing to say here? I'm Canadian, so I don't want to offend anybody. Did you say you women are
no
friends,
worries.
Or you people are friends, or...
I'm not a snowflake,
you're
no
friends.
Worries.
You're just friends. You people are friends. So anyway, I think Renee's got a comment here.
Oh, well, you know, I think what you've shared about even securing the matching donor is a really key point to help a lot of our listeners know that, you know, obviously they work so hard to do all of these, you know, these components of their event to raise money. And yet, you know, if you can secure just that one more ask, you can double, you know, you can pretty much double, hopefully, what you've done in just one step. I did want to ask you too, have there been any lessons learned from the last, you know, the years that you've been involved with the event, things that maybe you've stopped doing or things that you started doing that you didn't expect to work but did?
Well, we stopped doing a silent auction because of the time and energy that we had to put in that, and the return, the dollars that we got back. We saw that the items were going for less than the value of the donated items. And so we felt that the silent auction was not worth our time or investment. So we stopped doing that. And last year was the first year that we didn't have that. We were a little nervous, but we exceeded all of our fundraising goals on the event. So we know that we made the right decision. We talked to our chairs about that again this year. And again, they felt it was more important to focus on three key, wonderful live auction items, and then to have the Raise the Paddle with a compelling story and a match. And so that's what we put all of our time and energy into doing it. And I really feel that that is the best use of anyone's time, not so much on looking at things like centerpieces, decor, lighting, etc. That's of less value to bringing in dollars for your event. Of course, you have to have a fun event that people will remember, etc. But really, if you put the legwork into in advance, having the things like the wonderful auction items, having the matching items, making sure that you're aware what minimum ask, whether it be 10,000, 20, 25, depending on, you know, your donor base and who's in the room and what people are willing to do, that is probably one of the most important parts of the evening.
So, Teresa, last year was the first time that you eliminated the silent auction. What was the reaction from the guests? Because I know that some of the guests do enjoy participating in the silent auction. What was the reaction of the crowd?
You know, nobody actually noticed or said anything. And I think it's because our group is a really strong networking group. We have a lot of professionals and high net worth individuals who maybe only see each other two or three times a year. And they really like to network, especially coupled with some great wine and some great food. They want to enjoy each other and not necessarily be looking at baskets or carrying baskets back out to their car. So no one actually complained about it. And I know that our chairs and our committee were very thankful not to have to do all that additional work to rake in such a small amount of money that they've provided us in the past.
Very good. One thing that, have you ever considered a super silent auction? Have you ever done the super silent? Do you know what that is?
I have. I've actually been to an event, two events, where there was a super silent auction, and I studied them. I go to events all the time, obviously, trying to pick up on trends, and we always consult with our auctioneers about what's working and what's not working. And we had considered doing that because we had some items that before we decided that we were not going to do the silent auction, we had some items, but we found another way to use those at a different event that we collaborated on with another organization, and so we did it. But I'd be very curious to try that myself. We haven't.
Yeah, just for the listeners who may not know what a super silent auction is, it's a small silent auction that has premium items in it. All of those items would typically be strong enough to be featured in a live auction, but in the interest of saving time or dealing with too many donations, you set up a small section, and super silent auctions typically will have maybe as few as six items in there and maybe as many as a dozen items. And so it still gives the crowd something to play with if they're into the silent auctions. And as again, they're all premium items that bring good revenue. Well, that's wonderful. Well, Teresa, you have shared so much with us here today, and we'll get you just to summarize here very quickly. If an organization is similar to yours in that they don't do a lot of fundraising events through the year, but they want to try a fundraising event, but they don't have the people power and they don't have the staff, where would you suggest they start? And let's just start with a blank sheet of paper.
Well, I would start with some great chairs. The chair people actually set the tone for the organization. And if you could find some great chairs who are very passionate about your organization and the cause, who have some experience, we have two couples this year, and they're wonderful chairs. They have a lot of experience. And I know that their presence alone has really increased the profile of our organization and the people who are coming around to volunteer. So that's number one, the first step.
Where would you go from there? So you've got your good chairs, then obviously that's going to lead you to a network of supporters. But just as far as the manual labor involved in doing the myriad of tasks that need to be done to organize an event, where would you go next? Would you hire an event planner, or do you hire an event planner?
We never have. We actually have done it all through volunteers. We have some wonderful volunteers, Junior League of San Diego, National Charity League. There are some great organizations out there who have stepped up both in advance of our event and on the day of the event that we've never had to hire an event planner. But if the organization if you really have no experience and you don't have a core group of volunteers, then yes, I would make that investment.
Okay, one final thing I just wanted to ask, and then we'll pass the mic to Ian and Renee here for final thoughts or input or questions. Your VIP reception, what do you do to elevate that experience for your high-end guests who have obviously paid a premium to be there? I would imagine that your sponsors are probably also invited to that, but how do you elevate that experience?
Well, they have the premium food and wine at a separate event that is not open to the general public, and they have the best seats in the house. as well as we try to accommodate any needs that they might have in advance. For instance, if they need to bring an extra person or they need to make last-minute changes at their table, we will do that. They will get valet parking complimentary, et cetera. Anything to make their experience the best possible experience for themselves and their clients and their guests so that they'll want to become sponsors and VIPs next year. And as I said, last year, based on the venue and the entertainment, we sold out in advance and we couldn't accommodate all the people who wanted to be VIPs, but this year we moved to a much larger venue, so we absolutely can.
That is such a good problem to have, huh?
People, yes, absolutely.
There's not an organization out there that wouldn't love to have that problem. And what about access to the entertainer, your key entertainer for the night? Do the VIPs have any special access? Do you do meet and greets or anything like that?
Yes, we did last year for our very, very top supporters.
Good.
And it was a wonderful photo opportunity that was organized by Blotta Entertainment, Camille Carlin, and it was really special.
Hi, Teresa. This is Ian from Windspire here. Kind of an interesting question for you, and feel free to take your time thinking before you answer. My question is this. What is one thing that you know now that you wish you would have learned maybe 5 or 10 years ago that maybe would have changed the trajectory of what you're doing?
I think it's, as I mentioned earlier, don't be so worried about the things like the centerpieces, the decor, et cetera, all the peripheral items. I think focus on the relationships and making sure that you have the key relationships with the chairs, the volunteers, the underwriters, the sponsors, et cetera, and that it's a two-way street. We need to meet their and accommodate their every need, and they're supporting us financially so that we can provide the best programs and services. I think I used to be more worried that, we had spectacular centerpieces, that we had wonderful gifts for everybody, et cetera. But now I've learned to really drill down on the important parts of the event that are going to bring in the most revenue and also make it a memorable evening for the people that we that are as passionate about the cause as we are.
So thanks, Teresa, for sharing about that. I think you do have a very unique event in that I don't want to call it a private concert, but it really, I think that is one of what makes your event stand out in San Diego as, something that people will actually look for every year. I know I get your emails and I'm always looking to see who the next entertainer is. So you've really found a niche in our community with how you've actually set your event apart, and it obviously shows in the way that you sell out. So thank you so much for sharing about that.
Thank you, Renee.
And I just want to say, Teresa, thank you so very much. You've just shared a ton of great information with us here today on Events with Benefits. And one of the things that I personally really like about this podcast is we speak to the teachers who are trying to figure out how to do a little bake sale to make some extra revenue for their PTA. And then we talk to organizations like yours that are doing these magnificent events with high-end entertainment, $600 ticket prices, selling out waiting lists, and all the rest. So you've really given us some great insight here today and covered some very important points for anybody that's in the fundraising space. It does not matter if you're a small organization or large. So Teresa Stivers, thanks so very much. Walden Family Services, and as we turn you loose here, can you just maybe do you have anything that you'd like to offer our listeners, or are you going to have any materials or anything that they can access in our show notes following the podcast?
Oh, absolutely. I can make some information available to anybody who might be interested. Just have them email me. I'm happy to share. I believe that in collaboration and not competition. So anybody's welcome to email me if they have any questions at tstivers@waldenfamily.org.
Very good. Teresa, thank you so much for joining us today on Events with Benefits.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the show this week. For show notes, special offers, or to listen to previous episodes, you can visit us at eventswithbenefits.com. Please also consider subscribing to our podcast on iTunes. And if you enjoyed the show, do us a favor and write us a review while you're there. If you have any questions or feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email at hosts@eventswithbenefits.com. We'll see you next time.